Welcome to the Hub. I'm Michelle Hope, your unapologetic sexologist.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another lovely edition of Sexpert Positions. I'm your girl, Michelle Hope, and today I am with none other than Jaja, a.k.a.
Sianna Bianca McQueen.
Sianna Bianca McQueen. thank you so much for joining me on Sexpert Positions. You know, we met at a panel we were both on.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't quite end well for me. You know, I may or may not have taken up more room than I should have. However, I was spewing facts. Some of you may or may not have any clue what we're talking about, and quite frankly, we can just bury it because I don't need to bring any attention to it today. Today, I invited you on because, Jaja, you have a story, and I want you to tell the world that story.
Okay.
That seems so epic. I feel like I dun dun dun.
Me too. That's
I feel a little scary.
You're
epic. You're a baddie. You're a shabaddie.
I appreciate that. I try to be.
Do you know what a shabaddie is?
I think so.
I had to Google it. A shabaddie is the baddest bitch of all time, badder than all others.
Oh, wow.
According to UrbanDictionary.com.
Oh, geez. I don't know if I can shoulder that mantle, but I'll try.
I'm pretty sure you can.
Okay.
So we met on a panel about working in the sex industry.
Uh-huh.
So, Jaja, in what capacity do you work in the industry?
Honestly, I don't. I have the very minimal capacity that I have worked in the industry is I was once a phone sex operator.
Oh, how was that?
It was fun. It was so amazing. It was a blast. I wish I was still a phone sex operator. It's so fun. Easy money.
I once auditioned for a position as a phone sex operator, and quite frankly, I was told by the audition person that I should never do this again, ever in life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they basically told me that I was not a qualified candidate for the position.
Oh, no. Well, luckily for me, like, the agency that hired me, they actually put you through, like, training. So they, you know, you got to go down the, run the whole gamut of like what they expected from you, like how to run the calls and things like that. So it was pretty, we did like 2 weeks of training and they put you on your call and you're on your way. So it was pretty good. Mm-hmm.
So what I kind of want to highlight here is that there are agencies out there to teach you how to be a great phone sex operator. And where were they when I was trying to be a phone sex operator?
Well, honestly, I'm not even sure they exist anymore. Like, this was way back in the day. So, and this place, it was called Ultimate Live Services. And it has since been run out of business. And like a lot of things have been, you know, rendered obsolete with Google and Pornhub and Instant.
You gotta love a good Pornhub.
Right, and you know, and then there's a whole VR experience that's, you know, that's burgeoning right now. So, yeah, I haven't seen much or known of any recent phone sex operators.
So out of curiosity, how in the world did we end up on a panel together about sex work?
So I think it was, so the panel was mostly centered around censorship online. Which that I have been kind of a recipient of. Oh, and I will say, so in another capacity, a very small capacity that, you know, of the sex work industry, and I wouldn't really say that this is a determinant, but so yeah, so I actually write for Salty Magazine, and it is a feminist sex, dating, and relationship newsletter, bi-monthly newsletter. So in that capacity, you know, I do divulge aspects of sex, dating, obviously, and relationship from the trans perspective to the community. And I guess in that respect, you know, enlightening the masses of, you know, different ways and capacities that trans women and the men that love them enjoy sex could be considered sex work as well. I know there's a lot of naysayers out there saying that there's no such thing as academic sex work, which I think is so laughable. You know, our dear Dr. Ruth was a sex worker, and, you know, she taught the world sex education. And so, yeah, I think if you speak on it, if you teach on it, you're doing the work.
Hey.
And it involves sex.
Hey.
So it's sex work.
Yeah, I kind of feel like most of us are selling sex work. We just try to act like we're not. But that's neither here nor there. So sex worker otherwise, we met on this panel. We hit it off.
Yeah.
You's a baddie. I'm a baddie.
Yeah, you are.
Like, we should be baddies together.
Well, yes, we should.
But I think, you know, Jaja, one thing that's important to highlight for our listeners, because, you know, they're listening, we should be very, very clear that you are a trans
woman. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for us to continue to educate communities of color on you're a sister to the cause, just like I'm a sister to the cause.
Correct.
And that the idea of gender expression and gender identity is not conform to just the biological gender you are assigned at birth, but rather that we are all who we believe we are. And so I kind of want to talk about, as a person of color, as a trans woman, how do we better educate our communities through your own story, through your own voice? And that is why I was like, I have to get Jaja on this podcast, because I value you as a person. I value your story, and I honor your commitment to continue to fight the righteous fight of equality and equity for all people through your writing, through your acting, through your activism. So I would love to take this opportunity to talk about your life.
Okay. So, and honestly, so I want to touch on actually something that you just said, and it's been honestly one of my biggest, I don't want to say platforms, but one point that I've always, you know, a staple point that I always come back to and try to make, and it's the distinction between sex and gender. And so I often hear, like just now, like a lot of people say, the gender you were born or assigned at birth, and I always try to drill into people's head, you know, a lot of times, you know, a woman can be sitting on, I've seen multiple YouTube videos of, you know, beautiful women like Janet Mock and Laverne Cox, and people in the comments are like, I don't care how pretty she is, it's still a man. Well, no, because you're looking at a woman. And so what is between their legs is between them and Jesus, and it's their sex that was assigned at birth. Your gender can be anything that you make it to be. Your gender is what you present to the world. So if I'm presenting to you the visage of a woman, I'm a woman. My sex could be male or female at birth. That's your sex. So I always try to, that's my biggest talking point, is educating people the difference between acknowledging someone's gender not based on the sex, because there is a difference, and the sooner people understand that and you know, verbalize that, I think the more problems that we can avoid.
So Jaja.
Yes.
I don't want to split hairs here, but I do want to be very honest with a part of the interest in interviewing you is the fact that I think you're a beautiful woman of color.
Thank you.
And I think that being a trans woman of color in 2018, you have a lot of power. I feel like you have an opportunity to create change.
Yes.
So if you were able to make one law, legal or illegal, what would it be? Like, if you had the power to make a law or remove a law or change a law, what would it be?
It would be a very simple law, and that would be that all crimes would be punished across the board the exact same way. And if there ever were a punishment for a law, or I'm sorry, well, for a law broken, that was given a lighter sentence than a person received even 10, 20 years before that for the same exact crime, the person that was convicted earlier, their sentence would be reduced to match the punishment of the newer crime being committed.
Well, that wasn't a good answer, so we'll delete that. Don't worry. Anyway,
but that should be a law with the
emergency. So you're telling me somebody who murders a trans person should get the same repercussions as someone who jaywalks?
No.
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying for all the black men sitting in jail right now for selling weed, or for a lot of black men that are sitting in jail right now because they were falsely accused of rape, versus the Brock Turners of the world who get off with a slap of the hand.
Fuck a Brock Turner.
So if one person, if a white boy gets off for the same crime that the black man is sitting in jail for, the black man needs to come up out of jail. That's just what I'm saying. That's
you
the
right.
law.
Well, I think they all should probably be in jail.
Well,
we're not judges. We're not juries. We're just talking shit.
Well, and on the converse side of that, if especially if they're guilty, you know. But yeah, if you let in one, I feel like what's good for the geese is good for the gander. If you let in one person out, and then that makes society as a whole then look at, okay, well, why was this person let off? And we need to make sure that this law is properly enforced, versus one person being treated unjustly versus another one.
That's fair. All right, Zsa, let's get down to brass tacks. All right. You are an amazing individual. We met on a panel. Great. You are a trans woman of color.
Yes.
Who has aspirations of writing a children's book called
Sherry, Jerry, and Terry.
So tell me about this vision of this children's book, because I believe that is the entryway of your story. And I believe let's be real. The reason I asked to interview is because I want your story to be told.
Aww.
I think it's a valid story. I think it's a real story. I think it's a human story.
Yeah.
So tell me about Jerry, Terry, and Sherry.
Okay. So Sherry, Jerry, and Terry would be loosely based on my experience and really just the kind of universal to people with common sense analogy. And it's something that I've touted for a long time, is that for trans women, you know, are comparative to like a butterfly. And so, especially with being misgendered, so if you see a caterpillar or you see a butterfly, you don't continuously call it a caterpillar simply because that's what it was born as. If it has wings, it's a butterfly. So you don't look at it and say, hey, that's a beautiful caterpillar. And then somebody's like, no, that's a butterfly. Well, no, it was born a caterpillar, so I'm going to keep calling it a caterpillar. So that's literally the same argument that people make as far as addressing trans women, is that you were born as one thing, and I don't care if you changed into whatever, I'm going to address you as what you were born as. Okay, then you would be the dumbass calling the butterfly a caterpillar. And so the children's book would really kind of just touch on that. And from my experience, I wanted the young protagonist of the book, Terry, being born as a male named Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, and then goes on this journey of self-discovery, and ultimately asking their parents, you know, does it matter that I now spell my name T-E-R-R-I? I'm still the same person, you know, I just was a caterpillar, now I'm a butterfly. I'm just a more evolved version of myself. So why isn't the love the same?
The idea or the analogy of you comparing a trans person's life to a butterfly is so deep.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you recognize how deep it is, because you're right. A butterfly is born a caterpillar.
Yeah.
But it is through a process of self-exploration mm-hmm. that they become a butterfly. But because it's in nature, we question it not. Yet people who identify as trans, we often want to second guess them or discredit their experience. And I feel like in that very statement, you've really kind of, you've shut it down in that.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, it's something that it's an analogy that I've subscribed to for a really long time, like at least since, like there's a popular meme of it now, but I remember like even as I discovered I was and my, you know, telling my sister and her saying, well, you'll always be my brother and you'll always be, you know, the name, da, 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 da. And I'm like, no, that's, and I told her that, and now it's become like a really popular, I won't say, you know, whoever, I believe in the collective subconsciousness, so I can't say that I'm the first person that came up with it, but I've came to that conclusion on my own, and it's, you know, I've subscribed to it for a long time, and it's now like a popular meme, everybody's sharing it, and that's great, because I feel like the more people that need to see it, the better people will imbibe and understand that.
So, can we talk about when you first realized that there was a disconnect between the sex you were born with and the sex that you identified with?
Sure. That came at around 4 years old. And I distinctly remember, so at four, I don't know what I was upset about. It was a Sunday morning. And I was just upset. I don't know why. I don't remember what it was, but I was, you know, being a whiny toddler. And I remember my stepdad getting upset saying, you always crying like a little girl. And you, if you want to be a little girl, we're going to put you in a blue. We're going to put you in a Sunday dress and you can go to church in a dress. And I remember being so excited. And I, like, my mood quickly shifted from whatever I was upset about to just excited, like, oh my God, I get to wear a dress today. And I knew the exact dress I wanted to wear. Like, my sister had this pretty powder blue dress with a satin blue sash that I was like, oh, I know I can fit that one. I'm gonna wear that one to church. And I remember the wave of disappointment that came over me when my mother was like, no, don't do that to that boy. That's, you know, that's not right. Because my mom, you know, she spent a lot of her life policing my gender. You know, I've always been very androgynous. Even as a kid, like, I had a lot of hair. So people, I remember my dad actually being upset with my mom. So, like, he stopped talking to her because he wanted to let my hair grow out, and she took me right to the barber and shaved all that shit off and was like, nope. She was tired of people mistaking me for a little girl. And I guess even then she kind of identified, because I just recently came out to my dad and told him, you know, I'm transgender. And he was like, yeah, I knew when you were two. And I was like, two?
Wait, he knew when you, he identified at 2 years old.
At two.
He recognized that you may have been born in the wrong physical body for the gender that you most identified with.
Yeah. So here's another weird dichotomy with my immediate family is that, you know, a lot of times in a lot of cases I see that, like, the men, the father takes, you know, a transgender outing the hardest. But in my case, it was the reverse. It was, so my mother, you know, she still really kind of doesn't accept me. And she's on record as saying, you know, I prayed for a boy. I didn't want any more girls, blah, blah, blah. So, and the crazy thing, so the story I just told about my mom cutting my hair, I now, like, observing the chronological order of things, I think that is when my dad kind of made the decision. I'm like, okay, well, if he wants to be a girl, if that's, you know, whatever. My dad has always been very kind of like go with the flow, nonchalant about it. So I think that's why he had the thing of like not cutting my hair. And so, and I, like, my mom was the one that kind of nipped that shit in the butt. And yeah, because I was two. And there's pictures of me like with, you know, my hair all grown out, blah, blah, blah. And then I, like, three or four is like I stopped smiling, my hair shaved off. My cousin just recently shared a picture of me on his Instagram. of he and I, and you can see in that he's like, I think he said like, oh, I don't know why you didn't like the dog. And I was like, no, I just didn't like my fucking haircut. So yeah,
I have to ask. It seems as though your father has been a huge supporter in your life experience, your transition. And I don't want to discredit the experience of other people of color who have transitioned or who have become transgendered. But what has your father's support meant to you in your personal growth, your developmental growth, in your transition?
Honestly, so it's another weird thing with me. I really didn't have my father's support until like recently, because this is the same man, and it's another reason why it's taken me so long, like this year being in my late 30s, telling him, because he's also been on record of going on rant saying, I didn't raise no faggots, and you know, things of that nature. So that really put me in the headspace of like, okay, if I tell him anything, I don't know if it's gonna cost me my life. I don't know if it's gonna, you know, I don't know how he will react. So I internalized a lot of, even when I didn't know what trans was and I just thought I was a feminine gay male, I kept it to myself. So it wasn't until like I came into my own and was like, well, I don't care, you know, I'm a grown person. I don't, you, nobody's paying my bills but me. I don't answer to anybody. So, you know, this is who I am, and either you accept it or not. And really putting the ball into his court and saying, okay, so now what you gonna do? You know, you can either cut all ties with me or be in my life. And seeing him make the conscious decision to remain in my life, that's what, it wasn't so much developmental, obviously, you know, given the history, but just that decision meant the world to me, because it was really unexpected. I didn't know how he was gonna react. And yeah, it's helped me even these past, I told him literally from my birthday, which was May 19th this year, I was like, I will not go into another year of my life with this weight on my shoulders. And so that was probably the biggest birthday gift he's given me and I've given to myself, was the freedom of the honest communication between us.
I mean, I sit here with you, I'm looking at you, you are a beautiful woman. You are extremely articulate about your process. And as a woman of color to another woman of color, we deal with a lot of shit within our families.
Yes.
And to hear about the process and the kind of like things you went through with your father and how he supports you now in a space that's like, no matter what, correct? Like, yeah. I want to make sure I'm correct. You guys came to like a come to Jesus kind of moment where it was like, yeah, you're my son, or AKA you're my dad, and we're gonna do this, and you're gonna accept me in this space,
yeah,
regardless of who I present as.
Yeah. And my dad had the funniest reaction too, because so like I told you earlier today, when we're talking, so I've been creatively consulting for his energy startup, Phoenix Energy Systems, shout out. So after he told me, yeah, I knew when you were like two, and he told me the story of how he put two and two together.
I love that he was like, oh, I knew it too, baby.
Right. So he's like, that's water on the bridge. So now like, let's get back to making his money. Right. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And that was it. It was like, that was literally I think I still have the text in my phone. So yeah. And it was over text, because I couldn't get him to, I was trying to like get him to read my salty post about trans dating, which he didn't have time to do, and I was finally like, fuck it, I'm trans, what you gonna do? And it was with it, and he was like, whatever.
But so did, prior to you coming out to him and your family as trans, did he just think you were effeminate gay man, or?
Well, like he said, he knew when I was two, and I guess he was just waiting for me to, I guess, realize it on my own and to see what I was going to do, whether I was going to continue to internalize it, live in the closet, because a lot of my life was, I wouldn't say so much in the closet, but was very like understated. You know, I was a feminine gay man, even in the military.
Okay, let's go back to, like, I just want to stop right there.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the military.
Okay.
How long did you serve our country?
I would say 4 years.
Were you active duty?
Yes, I was.
Did you end up overseas?
That's classified.
Okay, classified. Fabulous, fine, no problem. Do you think that the military is understanding to the needs of trans and, well, just let's just say, do you feel like our U.S. military is accepting of LGBTQ enlistees?
Yes. And that's a two-part answer, but the first part is an emphatic yes, because being a soldier, I will tell you, and like being, it's like literally being in the largest fraternity in the world. But I will tell you, and a lot of other soldiers and veterans will tell you, when you got bullets flying at you, or if you're hurt and or wounded, you do not give a flying fuck who is shooting back for you and covering your ass. Who's in a, you do not care. You don't care if that person got on a training bra, got a strap-on dildo underneath. You do not give a fuck as long as they get you out alive. So when it comes down to, and you want to make sure that they are trained to cover your ass when it comes down to that.
So the
knee-jerk reaction is an emphatic yes. And to my story, I did not, like, I mean, obviously we all, like, as a woman of color, as a gay man, as whatever, even straight men go through their own, everybody gets their own type of hazing and bullshit thrown at them in the military. And like nobody's exempt. It's just the type of person you are deep is that's the only thing that determines what type of quote unquote harassment you endure. But everybody across, but there's nobody that has like an easy time in the military. So the second part of that.
Wait, pause. Okay. I just want to, before we get to the second part.
Okay.
Basically, what I'm hearing you say is that as a veteran, mm-hmm. as an American soldier, mm-hmm. when it comes to war, mm-hmm. it don't fucking matter who is on your side, fighting for your side, as long as they got your back.
Exactly. And anybody that's been shot at, that has battle scar wounds, or that is a veteran, or that's missing limbs or whatever, and has a story to tell of being dragged out of a firefight, will tell you the exact same thing. It's all over the internet. It's all on social media. They will tell you the exact same thing. So the second part of that, on paper, so I was enlisted in the time of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And to this story, and to the transgender narrative, I will tell you this story. There's a movie starring Jane Fonda's son named Troy Garrity. It's called Soldier's Girl. And that's based on an American active duty soldier named Barry Winchell. Barry Winchell was a cisgender straight male who went off post having a good time and just so happened to fall in love with a trans woman named Kyle Pernica Adams. His battle buddies, his friends, and mind, he's a cisgender straight male now. And go back to what I said about everybody having a hard time in the military. He's a cisgender straight male. He met a girl who he thought was cisgender. Turns out she was transgender. He loved her anyway. Beyond what her sex was, he loved her for her gender, which was woman. His battle buddies found out. They bashed his head in with the bat when he slept on guard duty. This happened. I only know about this. Well, I know about this two ways. One, because it happened a mile away from where I was doing my basic training. I had gotten into basic training. I was in a week in my unit, and drill sergeant put us in formation, and she said, "Look, drill sergeant, don't care who you love, who you like, what you do behind closed doors. Keep that shit to yourself, because a soldier just got his head bashed in a couple of quads over." And that shit shook me to my core so bad. I developed this "I wish a motherfucker would" attitude. And I was violent. I would fight at the drop of a dime. My nickname in basic training was Too Sweet, because it's a penitentiary movie reference. But yeah, anybody that looked at me crazy, I would fight you. You talk shit to me, I would fight you. Because I wish you would roll up and think that you could beat me with a bat just because I am who I am. And I was like, and if they put me out of the military, then you just do me a favor. Then that means I wasn't meant to be in the military. But I never got put out. I never even got, you know, any type of disciplinary actions, nothing. But that stuck with me. And sure enough, so they made a movie about it, about what happened, called A Soldier's Girl, starring Troy Garrity. And it shed light on, like, what I was like, oh my God, that's what happened. And they were like, yeah, this was a true story on Fort Jackson. So anyways, so that kind of informed a lot of my military career. And I went through the military with almost a chip on my shoulder. I was just like, yeah, they were like, why are you so angry? And I was like, because I know how y'all think behind closed doors. Even as a gay man, you know, if they did that to a white cis straight guy, what would they do to my gay black ass? You know what I mean? And so I was like, I had to be vigilant about just attitudes towards me and like underlining treatment. You know, somebody, even if they shook my hand a little bit the wrong way or snickered as I walked away or whatever, I had to really watch my own back. And I will say that in my unit, but I never, even though I felt like that, I never was exposed to any of, you know, I got my jives, you know, people would yell down the quad, hey, quit twisting as I walked or whatever. But my unit was like all the brothers that I never had. Like, they were so overprotective of me. Even like in my dating life, like they would like come down on, and I brought guys back to the barracks, and they would like grill them, like, if you have a problem with this motherfucker, you tell us. Like, they were like my brothers, and I loved it.
How long were you in the military?
4 years.
Wow. And how long have you been out of the military now? Yeah, you're like, right.
Almost, oh my God, it's almost, no, it's not 20, like 15 years.
Okay, so we'll say 12 years.
Okay.
You know, give you some years back.
Thank you.
But I are you still in contact with any of your...
Yeah. Yeah, I reconnected with a bunch of my unit.
Now, does your unit know you as a man or as a woman?
As a woman. Like, recently, now. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I was so feminine even there. Like,
but
I
there
was,
you like, were a man.
Yes.
Okay, but now they recognize that you have crossed over.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, though. They recognize that before I did. Before I even recognized I was trans. They were like, McQueen, you're the little sister I never had. That's literally what they told me.
Hey, little sister.
Yeah, and I was like, and I was be the one like, I'm a boy, like leave me alone, I'm a boy. But yeah,
you're the most prettiest boy I had ever seen as I sit across from you on this bench.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what they used to tell me all the time. I would
because you's a pretty motherfucker.
Don't make me blush, girl.
I'm just saying.
But thank you. Yeah. So and that's I got that a lot. And yeah, no, I'm friends with a few of them, for the ones that I could find, like on Facebook, Instagram, stuff like that. My first sergeant, some LTs, like, yeah. And it's funny too, like a lot of them were like, you're gonna be a model one day, I'm gonna see you on a red carpet. I was like, shut up, I'm gonna stay in the military 20 years. But I got out and everything that's happening is exactly what they told, and they're like, see, I told you. They always write me on Facebook. So
let's talk about what's happening. So what are you doing now?
So I've been, well, actually I kind of took a hiatus from modeling to go through, like start and go through my transition. I've only been in transition for like a year now, but now.
Pause. What is transition to you? Or what, when you talk about transition, what part of transition are you at? Or can, for the listeners, just let's educate everyone.
Okay. So. First, clarify that nobody's transition is exactly the same. Right. But for me, as I define, so I kind of break mine up into there's a part when I recognized that I was transgender, where I accepted I was transgender, and then when I actively started living as a transgender, which was only like maybe 3 years ago in Atlanta. I moved away from Miami, so I would like my family wouldn't be privy to, just, you know, and not to endure like those conversations of like, why are you dressing like this? Like, what are you doing? This and that and the third. So yeah, I moved to Atlanta. I didn't start actively transitioning, which is the day I first took my first hormone, until May 27th of 2017, last year, which I call my Traniversary.
Traniversary. It's our Traniversary.
Exactly.
I only made plans to hold your little hand. It's a Traniversary.
Exactly.
I mean, that's cool. I really just wanted you to get, to, like, not to push you, but the idea that, like, you're taking hormones, you now have accepted that there's definitely a mind-body disconnect.
Yeah.
And you're currently now on hormones.
Yeah.
How do you like hormones? As a woman who's taking birth control, which is just like excessive hormones, how much do you like them motherfuckers?
I love titty Skittles. Shout out to titty Skittles. I love them. As you know, me here, sitting here with my cleavage staring you in the face.
Bitch. I mean, like, listen, hormones is a lot. I feel like we're on different sides of the spectrum of hormones. Yeah. I take them to prevent pregnancy and they make me cranky and irritable. Yeah. You take them and you have great cleavage.
Yeah, they do. They do kind of mess with your moods and
reasoning.
Yeah, I'd
really, common sense.
I try to like keep myself in the house on those days. And the crazy thing is literally like a crapshoot, like roulette almost, because you never know like day to day how it's gonna affect you.
Yeah, and welcome to estrogen.
Yeah, that's the kind of scary thing. But I mean, I you know, like all women, I power through that motherfucker and get it done. So,
welcome to a Tuesday in my life, Zsa Zsa.
Exactly.
So you've been on hormones for about a year now.
Yeah.
You have support from your friends and family. I most specifically, real quick, I want to encapsulate the relationship between you and your father.
Okay.
It seems as though your father has always been supportive of you. The face
He's
you just made.
Around.
But
around.
It seems like that has been a pillar in your development. So how has that, the relationship with your father evolved?
Sure. So I kind of coined a term from my family per se. I call it backhanded acceptance, where someone will say, you know, oh, I love you just the way you are, but I'm not going to adhere to your proper pronouns. Oh, you know, I accept the way, I accept your lifestyle choice. But the sentence of I accept your lifestyle choice is not accepting my lifestyle at all, is because it's not a fucking choice. It's who I, that's like saying, okay, I accept you for being born a black woman. What's there for me to accept? You know what I mean? So, or, and you didn't choose what you were born as. So why should it be up to me to accept what you couldn't choose? So there's that. And kind of, there was a time period of that, of not even as a trans woman, just as, you know, in this, when I was embracing being trans and experimenting with wearing, you know, androgynous and ambiguous clothing and things like that, you know, my immediate family kind of got more vocal about, like, you know, well, what is going on? What, you know, my journey. And like I said, the backhanded acceptance. Well, you know, I still accept you no matter what you choose to do or whatever. So, yeah, with my dad particularly, it seems to me, I guess, like I said, he's always kind of been waiting to see what I was going to do, and which I didn't know that. I factored that into like my thinking, but I wasn't sure. Like, you never know exactly what anybody's thinking, but it turns out that's exactly what he was doing. So it's really kind of been a 180, where that he's just been kind of like this stern authority figure to just one of support. And, you know, a lot of times he's talked me down off the ledge of panic attacks and anxiety and things like that, and just saying, you know, calm down, it's not the end of the world. you know, you trans, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere, and we all get through this. And so
I like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's as easy as that.
Yeah.
I'm here, you're here, you are who you are, I am who I am, but I got y'all back, and we gonna do this together. And it sounds like that was basically what your father's message was, right?
That's all I needed. Like, I've been on record as saying, like, you know, I don't even care if, I have other family who I've told them, you know, this is my name, this is my pronouns, blah, blah, blah. And I was at a point, like, I didn't even care if they, you know, they say people, oh, it takes time to change from one thing to another. Meanwhile, everybody, as soon as Puff Daddy, Sean Combs changed his names from Diddy to P. Diddy to Puff Daddy Diddy, whatever, people are in the know.
You know? And they're always concerned. Why'd he change his name? What's his name now?
But they're always on it. They always refer to him as his current name. But when I say I want to be called this and refer to it as that, it's like, oh, I'm going to need some time.
To adjust.
Right.
So if you just changed your name to, like, I don't know, P. Titty, no one would have a problem with it.
I don't know. And their excuse is like, oh, well, because I've been calling you this for so long. But I compare that with Puff. I'm like, we call Puff Daddy for 15 years. And then he changed it to Diddy. And then he changed it to, you know. But whatever. It is what it is. But
I mean, and you're a beautiful individual.
Thank you. As are you.
Honey. I'm just saying. I don't care what stage I would have met you at. I probably would have. Tried to holla, yeah. But anyway, so a question I feel like is so important because we're grown-ups. Uh-huh. What would you tell your 13-year-old self?
Stop doubting yourself. I think that, you know, they say that the problem with the world is that the stupid people have no doubts, have all the confidence, and the smartest people are full of doubt. And that has been, I think I'm fairly intelligent, but one of my biggest hindrances has always been self-doubt. And, you know, a lot of people say procrastination. And a lot of the things that, I don't have many regrets in life, but of the ones that I can identify and the ones that I've had to reconcile with myself have always been decisions that I wish I had just pulled the trigger and made sooner. You know, we talked earlier about me moving to New York and how my friends have, since 2009, been trying to get me to move here, and I've only been here two years now. And the whole transition, you know, I thought, back in the day, I look in the mirror and was like, oh, if I just had some titties. But, and I didn't know that being trans.
Pause. I just want to say this real quick. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I say, ooh, child, if I just had some titties. I'd be living my best life.
But you got nice hips though.
I have great areola.
Nice.
Great areola.
But yeah, so yeah, it would just be to make decisions and follow through on, you know, stop doubting myself and make decisions. Because life is so short, and now being like a 30 something person, I'm like, man, what would my life have been if I, you know, and now I've take these meetings, do these panels, do photo shoots. I remember I was just talking about this. One of the last commercials that I booked, I had just turned 35, but it was still, you know, they say black don't crack. So I was booked as a 17-year-old high school student. And I'm sitting on set, and the kids are all talking about, like, oh, yeah, finals this, da-da-da-da, college that. And I was like, yeah, when I was in the Army, I got out, like, 10 years ago. And the director's like, wait. How old are you? And I told them, and they were like, it was obviously like not a closed mouth in the house. Like all the jaws hit the desk and was like, wait, what the, how are you? Cause I blended in with the high school kids, but still like I was still in the same place as them. Like that little acting job where it's like a lot of my other friends who started, you know, who were modeling the same time as I did on South Beach, you know, are all now like in their own movies, this and that, and the third. I, like I said, doubted myself and was like, oh, it may not happen, so I'm going to go into healthcare. And I would tell myself to stop doubting myself. And all don't right. listen to anybody else.
So now you live in New York. What are you doing? What's the day-to-day like for Jaja?
My day to day is I consult creatively for my dad's energy company, one. I do some brand ambassadorship with a friend of mine, my very best friend, Danielle Campbell. Shout out Avenue 22 Clothing. Also, my cousin has a brand that he's doing for charity called One Society. It's these cute t-shirts that have inspirational prints on them, which I'll be repping as soon as he sends me some. Hey, Jason.
Send him some t-shirts.
Yes. Also, I've been volunteering for the VA, or Volunteers of America, has set in place an amazing, partnership of sorts called Battle Buddy Bridge, where it's veterans that support other veterans who have either substance abuse or mental health barriers. And we just kind of, honestly, it's just a shoulder to lean on, an ear for them to talk into, and to let them know that, like, we've either been in that position or we've come out of that. And, you know, I've had my own kind of mental health issues with depression, and I've since beat them, thank God. And so now, I don't face nearly as many challenges as a lot of my other veterans do, but I am there to listen to them and to help them find their own solutions that what helps them. So there's that. I just started back modeling, which I have two runway shows this fashion week. Hopefully I'll book another one before it all actually ensues. And I've just been doing some background work, acting. I'll be looking, courting agents and managers soon, so I can get some principal roles. And
where do we find you? What's your Instagram? What's your website? What's your handle?
My Instagram is my first and middle name, Xiana, Xiana, Bianca, Bianca, on Instagram, obviously. That's where I'm most active, honestly. If anyone wants to email me, it's the same as my handle, just at gmail.com for whatever, how they say bookings and inquiries, I guess. But
what is a booking or an inquiry?
We'll find out.
Right. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and this is like a heavy one, but I'm still going to ask it. Like, okay. What do you want to see from feminism in the next 5 years? What do you want to see as a trans woman of color from the feminist movement? What do you want to see?
Honestly, I want to see, and it is weird to say that I don't really include being a trans woman into what my vision is, because I've always described and defined feminism as equality. Like, it really boggles my mind. Like, first of all, there's all these subcategories and different facets of feminism where you're this type of feminist, or you're this type, you're agnostic or analog or digital, whatever the fuck, feminist. And at the very root of it is equality. If anybody that says they believe in equality and equity, you are in turn a feminist. And you can't say that you're not, you can't denounce feminism and cling to the status or the whatever it is of being, saying that you stand for equality. Because at the very least, feminism means you subscribe to the equality and equity of women of all genders, all sexes, you know, across, no matter what, you know, race, anything. It comes down to equality. And so, yeah, I just want to see the feminists of different subsets stop arguing within themselves. I want to see more men take up the mantle of representing feminism and not just appropriating it to get laid and saying, oh yeah, I'm down for the cause, I believe in it, just so they could land, you know, whatever.
We're talking heteronormative men.
Yes.
Also gay men, because, you know, gay men hate women too.
They, true.
Facts.
Not all, but a lot. Yeah. I would like to see.
Sorry, we had to take a picture.
Selfies. Yeah, no, I would just see, like to see a lot of, community, it's all about equality. And I feel like once we all just embrace across the board equality, honestly, there really should be no such thing as feminism. Because it's just equality. Like, why aren't we all equal? Why do women have to fight for equality and equity? If you believe in equality, then you should treat people equally. Period.
There it is, Jaja. Thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Thank you. Thank you for getting me drunk.
We're not going to air that. That we're going to edit out. But we will see each other again soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate this chance to talk and share and spill my guts.
Honey, there's more guts to be spilled.
My business out there. But, you know.
We'll do it again soon. Don't worry. Thanks for joining me. It's your favorite unapologetic sexologist, Michelle Hope, here in the Hub. And I want to remind you to make sure you're following me at MHSexpert on IG and Twitter, because each week I'm going to be delivering those sexy tips you want and answering all your questions. So hit me up on Twitter and IG using the hashtag unapologetic sexologist.